It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Two programming things I want to point out to you on COVID-19. We've added more state news updates throughout the day each weekday, and you can hear them after NPR newscasts at the top of each hour. And then do check out our website for the live coverage of the daily White House Coronavirus Task Force briefings. Go to WPR.org for those real-time updates. Right now, we're looking at rural health care and the coronavirus stimulus package. Healthcare providers may be able to tap into $100 billion meant to prop up their finances during the pandemic. But some rural hospitals fear they won't get a fair share of the money that's part of the $2 trillion economic stimulus and relief bill. So are you a physician or a nurse in a rural area? Are you a patient worried about the pandemic? Do you have a plan for how to respond if cases are diagnosed in your rural community? We're at 800-642-1234. John Eich is director of the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. John, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for inviting me.
So on our Wisconsin rural landscape, there have been some cases of COVID-19 reported in rural areas like Green and Wood counties. How have these outbreaks been managed by the healthcare systems there?
I think they've been managed quite well. The rural healthcare system is strong and very competent, so they can handle whatever comes their way, including this. The challenge is what we're all looking at is what if it gets a lot worse, and certainly what we're being told is that it could get a lot worse. So the question there is, do we have enough beds for care? Do we have enough rural EMS personnel to transport people? What if some of us get sick? How do we handle those? How do we handle those surges?
And it could get a lot worse, even for rural areas.
Yeah, it obviously can. I mean, it's the strange thing about this virus is that it travels person to person, community to community. So even in a rural area that is distant from an urban center, there's still the chance that one person comes into that community, meets with someone in a nursing home, and then that nursing home goes around there like wildfire. But that can be one community that has an outbreak, and then 20 miles down the road at the next one, they don't have that outbreak. So it's a weird, uneven thing. And I would say that unevenness is really part of the challenge. When we did a poll recently among rural hospital and EMS folks around the state, and what I heard back from them is there's this disconnect that we're all feeling. Whether you're in a city or a rural area, there's this sense of what you hear on the news about the terrible impacts. But when you actually look around you, most of us don't know someone who's been tested positive. That disconnect is even greater out in a rural area. That means that all of those disruptions, the childcare disruptions, schools, jobs, have happened immediately. But the virus feels even further away. And that brings both a lot of worry and uncertainty, but also, I think, again, this sense of disconnect from what's going on in other areas. It's more pronounced in rural areas.
And that might make be inclined for health systems in rural areas, perhaps, or even people living in rural areas to say, why? Why should we be preparing like this? We don't see it around us yet. What is going to hit us?
Yeah, and unfortunately, the lack of consistent messaging is a challenge. If our whole country could be united in one direction or another, I think it would be a lot easier on folks because they'd feel like we're all part of the same challenge. But unfortunately, what has happened at the national level, and even the state level, you know, at this larger than community level, is this sense of people disagreeing, telling us different things, you know, on one day saying it's going to be this and another saying it's going to be that. The federal approach being different than the state approach. It's understandable. We're all figuring this out as we go along. But what that does to a person in a community who's trying to do the best for their staff, for their patients, and for the community at large is really challenging.
So as you are in contact with hospitals and clinics in rural parts of the state, you're surveying them, seeing what they are needing as they start to figure out how to prepare for this. What are they telling you?
They're saying that it's a lot of the same challenges that the cities are going through. The personal protective equipment is in low supply like it is everywhere. We have some, but not necessarily enough for what we think could be coming. It's almost like those tsunamis that we hear about in other parts of the world where everything gets quiet all of a sudden and you can, and the water drains away, but you can just feel that something's coming. So it's that same thing. We don't have enough protective equipment, whether that's in a hospital for providers or for EMS, for the first responders. The testing is minimal. The tests available are minimal, and the testing results are slow to come back because we need to have courier services to a lab that's actually testing. So that's a challenge. The disruption that's happened from the smaller hospitals have stopped their elective procedures and surgeries, which impacts their bottom line drastically. The staff are sort of on standby. Again, in most communities, we're not seeing the level of cases. We're sure that it's possible and even likely, but it's this weird limbo state that's a real challenge for folks.
So let's look at the financials for a moment as we see the cancellation of routine clinical visits and perhaps some routine type of surgeries, or not routine, but things that aren't a pressing need. How does that hurt a hospital or a clinic's bottom line?
Well, it's as well as serving the health needs of their patients, it is also their business. And so much like the businesses that have been shuttered across communities, the hospitals too have felt the same thing. Every time they do a procedure or every time they work with a patient, that is revenue for them. So for them to stop all but the most critical procedures means that their revenue has been drastically hit, which is a challenge for them trying to make sure that they are paying their staff, that they are buying, they have the revenue to buy the materials that they need or the supplies they need, et cetera. It's a significant hit.
We're talking with John Eich, who is director of the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health, looking at how rural communities are preparing for COVID-19. Are you a healthcare provider in a rural part of the state? Do you feel prepared for the coronavirus pandemic? What are you telling your teams, your staff? Are you a hospital administrator? How is this affecting your bottom line? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. John, Wisconsin officials said this week that supplies from the Strategic National Stockpile were sent to providers around the state. Do you know if rural facilities got items from these shipments?
They did. The challenge is always, if you can imagine, there's a line to have things handed out. And I think rural both experiences and also worries that they are at the end of that line. These are desperate times for people. The staff in the hospitals and clinics are worried not just about the being within the facility, but also being out in the community. So this personal protective equipment is like gold, because it's the health and wellness for everyone around you. And so while the supplies are coming and people are donating, and they do have some to begin with, the lack of it is really challenging and makes it much more difficult as we think about this virus increasing. If we can't protect our staff as they're providing patient care, they're going to get sick. And when they get sick, they're going to be less able to help the patients. So it's a great worry.
Are there plans in place for a health crisis like this? Do communities think about these and put these together? What is the plan in rural areas for a big catastrophe?
So ever since 9/11, there's been a strong push for preparedness. There are coalitions that meet on a state level. They meet regionally. Every hospital and EMS service and clinic have plans in place. But that being said, what we thought we were preparing for, whether that's a tornado or natural event, or whether it's a mass shooter or even terrorism, was what we had experienced before. We can only, in a sense, kind of get ready for what we know. And what we're being caught by surprise with here is the pandemic. I think in the future, we'll be much better at planning for this. I think there's a lot of lessons and messages from this that we're going to absorb and get better at. But for right now, it's sort of looking to the north for the disaster and suddenly being hit from the side. So we certainly are prepared for this. Folks are trained. They're professionals. They're doing great work. But the question is, are we fully prepared? And the answer is no.
Communication lines are open as well. Do you see rural clinics and hospitals talking to each other?
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of networking between facilities. There is in our state a cooperative of 43 hospitals and that meets regularly. EMS talks amongst themselves. They come together at the county level, working on issues. There's emergency services coordinators at every county that are bringing the services together. So yeah, they are. And I would say that one of the things rural does best is come together as a community.
We're talking with John Ike, the director of the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health, which works to improve access to and the quality of rural health care. Are you a health care provider in a rural part of the state? What are your conference calls like right now? Do you have a plan for how to respond if and when coronavirus cases are diagnosed in your community? How are you going to scale up the response? Join in, be part of this, 800-642-1234. We'll be back with John Ike in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Congress is considering $100 billion in emergency funding to hospitals bracing for the coronavirus under a massive stimulus package. But some cash-strapped rural and safety net hospitals have already warned, as we've been talking about, their ability to make payroll after canceling non-emergency elective procedures. So we're looking at preparedness in Wisconsin's rural areas with the Office of Rural Health. If you're a rural physician or a hospital or a clinic administrator, how ready are you? How stable are your facility's finances? Are you working on plans to share resources with neighboring hospitals? How far away are they? Are they across one of our borders? How does that look like to work together? Join in with your situation, your insights, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. The Office of Rural Health's Director John Ike stays with us. So, John, you've used words like rural communities are nimble and they can innovate. What advantages might rural areas have in fighting this pandemic?
Well, I think the communication works really well at a community level. I think people are naturally more inclined to trust each other. They're more inclined to work together. As you quoted, just the fact that there's fewer structures around, people are able to try something out, to experiment with something, to innovate. There's a lot of power in what they can bring to this equation.
Oh, so there might be less red tape to be able to get something done at a very local level. If their neighbor says, "Hey, I need this. How can you do it? How can you restructure?"
Yeah, absolutely. It's the difference between turning the Titanic and turning your car. If you have a smaller hospital or EMS service with fewer people, and you say, "Hey, gang, let's do this instead," people can get on board and make that change quickly. Versus if you've got a very large organization, that's a slow turn.
You mentioned testing earlier. Is it more difficult for people living in a rural area to get tested for the coronavirus?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's difficult for us all to get tested. There just aren't enough tests. And the production, the bringing them up online has been very slow. But the difference is going to be distance to a testing facility. If you happen to live in a city that has a testing facility, then someone just needs to drive that test across town. If you live an hour away from that city, that testing site, well, you see where I'm going with that. So, and not only that, but they need, it can't just be anybody that couriers that, that takes that test to the lab. You have to get a dedicated courier service. And they're stretched now, suddenly having to take these things to every community across the state.
So how much capacity do you see in rural hospitals if they do have to increase their admissions? Are there literally enough beds? Is there enough room?
No. I mean, it really depends on, we're all looking at projections. We're looking at what's happened in other countries. We're trying to apply that here. It's been clearly identified that in every context, in a New York City and in a Madison and in Amory, Wisconsin, there are enough beds for what we normally see. There are not enough beds for a true pandemic. And so that's going to be a challenge. And again, it's that doubling effect as well. When the people, the healthcare providers and staff that are dealing with patients that are COVID positive, and they get sick, then they're less able to handle the influx. And the other question is, what happens if there's a second surge or a third surge? When we look back to things like the 1918 flu epidemic, the second and third surges were actually more deadly than the first. And my fear is that what we're going to see in rural areas will tend to be at a pace where it might be the second surge. And it's hard for people to say, wait, there's an emergency. Everybody shut everything down. But hold on, wait, hold on more. And at a certain point, people are going to let down their guard. And maybe we'll see the kind of cases in urban areas where it will feel like it came in time, that people will still want to crouch in readiness. But I think in rural areas, it's going to be a lot easier as they're waiting and waiting to go back to business as usual. And that's when the second surge could possibly hit them.
When they let their guard down.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking with John Eich, director of the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. Still time for you to join in this conversation about what rural communities are facing with the pandemic and how your rural community is responding. How are your neighbors looking out for each other? How is your local clinic communicating information to you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, John, the National Rural Health Association says 20% of the U.S. population does live in rural areas, but only 11% of physicians practice there. What is the situation like in terms of the number of doctors and, medical professionals who can staff up and respond?
So when they look at when they do the calculations to determine an underserved area, in other words, where there aren't enough providers for the population, most of those underserved areas are in rural parts of the state. So certainly it depends community to community. But there are large areas of the state where they already in normal times do not have enough physicians, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, et cetera, to meet the needs. People do well, and they meet the needs as best as they can. But if the system is already strained, and then you add in something like this, it could be a recipe for some very difficult times.
And oftentimes that rural doc is one of the lifelines to the community, the heartbeat of the community, a public face in that community and helping it come together.
Yeah, absolutely. People know each other in rural, and so they certainly know who their doctors and providers are.
What is the Office of Rural Health working on right now and today and then in the next few days? What are you doing?
So our job now is to strike a delicate balance. I mean, everybody is throwing information out at every person in healthcare. It's kind of like an avalanche of information. And so what we're trying to do is make sure that things aren't being missed for our constituent hospitals, providers, EMS, et cetera, that we're looking for the rural angle. We're looking for examples in other states to see what they're doing. We're finding out what resources might be particularly relevant. We're trying to reach out and listen to what folks in rural areas are saying versus a lot of the conversation is happening in cities, so that we can help advocate for the rural experience at the policy level.
At the policy level, do you think in recent years, you've been doing this a while, are we hearing the call to action for rural areas for healthcare? Is it becoming stronger?
Well, I think with the 2016 election, rural became a very important factor. And since then, we've certainly seen on all levels of government, certainly the federal level is much more interested in hearing what rural has to say. But also, as the country experienced that election and went, hold on, at the state level, at the county level, I do think that there is more interest in what rural has to say. When you're handing out resources, which is part of the work that happens at all levels, it still feels like rural is at the end of that line. But we're very good at making do with a little bit and stretching things to work. So,
John, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for asking the question.
John Ike is director of the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. Earlier, we heard from Amanda Bates, a paramedic firefighter. We've been examining how rural communities are preparing for the coronavirus pandemic. Coming up, it's a look at how to keep children engaged with reading as schools are closed and families are urged to stay home. And then later on the program, we learn how the pandemic is affecting small businesses and low-income families and how lawmakers are responding. You're with us for The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And this is the Ideas Network.